Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 139 with Mike Acomb. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Mike Acomb, we explore a number of interesting topics like his Mindset Mondays, to just do it, stick to it, the principle life is one of conflict, and his best used strategy to work with upset parents. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the top 10 fundraising ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, better leaders, I am here today with a fantastic principal that I met at the Principals Conference last summer in Philadelphia. Mr. Michael Acomb is currently an elementary principal in the Solon City School District, located near Cleveland, Ohio. He proudly earned his undergrad degree from John Carroll University, where he played football and learned the importance of serving with and for others. He holds master's degrees in special ed and K-12 organizational leadership. Michael has been a thought leader in school administration with 14 years of experience at the middle and elementary levels. His leadership has earned the U.S. Department of Education National Blue Ribbon, and over time his schools have earned numerous other national and state awards for consistent high performance in special ed, value-added growth, and overall student achievement. Most recently, the Solon City Schools were rated number one in the country by NCHE for public school districts. Since 2002, Michael has spoken to audiences throughout the U.S. on numerous topics. His passion in developing leadership and school cultures that support excellence in teaching and learning has earned him a reputation as an exceptional leader and collaborator. He is recognized widely for his skill in directing comprehensive, systematic, and differentiated literacy efforts in the early childhood and middle grades. He is an expert in strategically leading teams of teachers in developing systems of common assessments that monitors student learning and guide instructional and organizational decisions. He relishes in solving problems and helping others through improvement. Michael's married to Lindsay, and they have 4 school-aged children. Mike, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's quite a pleasure.
So before we get into Mindset Mondays, a very interesting topic I cannot wait to explore, please go all the way back and tell us what inspired you to pursue a career in education.
Oh boy. I was one of those kids who grew up not knowing if I had a passion and not knowing if I'd ever find one. I was fortunate that I had supportive parents and teachers with whom I could connect. In the end, I suppose I had hope and I believed I would go to college. No one in my family had done so. And so it was important to me that I do that. And so through hard work and patience, I believed in myself. I went to John Carroll, and it was there that it all came into view. It's a kind of a funny story. I was walking back from class one day, and I got a phone. I was walking back from class, got home, and a friend of mine had called me. And he said, I was walking through my campus the other day, and I thought of you. He said, I took a 101 course in education. And I realized that it's not for me. He said, but I think it's for you. So next semester, you should take a course and see what you think. And he said, you communicate well, you're patient, you're a leader. It could really be good. So I did that. I met Joe Whalen. He was a national distinguished principal from Cleveland. He was the professor. And he was one who really ignited in me the passion that I have for being an educator. I think a lot of people who knew me through the age of 23 or 24 were genuinely shocked and surprised that I chose that course, and have been hopefully proud of the success that I've had. So that was kind of what got me started into it. It all sort of felt like home to me. And then once I got into it and working with children, I knew that was where I wanted to be. And the rest, I guess, is history.
That's an interesting idea that you just shared, that education felt like home to you. Can you explore that a little bit more?
Yeah, I didn't feel, I went through a lot of majors and I didn't feel like I belonged in many of them. But there was something about the early coursework in education, when you got the chance to work with children and you got the chance to see learning be ignited in them and feel the pride that came from not just seeing them learn, but being a part of that. My first couple of years, I was putting, like any new teacher, I put a lot of time in. And I remember commenting to my principal at the time that none of this felt like work to me. It all felt like just the way I was supposed to live my life and the way that I was supposed to spend my time. And so I feel fortunate when I reflect on that, that it seems I found my passion and that's why it feels like home to me.
Yeah, I like that too. You know, you found your passion there. I know Ryan Jackson, he's been on the show twice and he's ignited his passion for being the underdog's advocate. And so he's, you know, he's all about serving those that are sort of overlooked. And I'm curious, you know, what is it about education and your passion? What makes it special for you?
I feel like whether you're a teacher or you're a principal, not everybody gets these opportunities. But we have opportunities as educators to not just serve others on the surface, but if we're doing it right, we're changing lives. We're helping to transform the lives of young people. And I see our mission as trying to figure out how to do that with each child and how to set them up for the idea that they can be successful in finding their passion and helping them to become the best version of themselves. At the end of the day, that's what we want. We want kids to be happy, successful, confident. We want them to have hope that there's a future for them where they can then make a difference. And to me, that's what drives every day for me, is getting the opportunity to build relationships with children and their families and helping parents through that process, helping kids through that educational process, coaching teachers to be better at what they do. We have an awesome opportunity in our positions to shape people and lives. And to me, that's what gets me excited.
Yeah, that is exciting, that ability to shape, to mold. And what I heard about your passion too is to help students be happy, successful, confident, and have hope. And that's just such an inspiring vision in terms of working with our communities and helping out students. So Mike, you know, we talked in the pre-chat about Mindset Mondays and culture building. So what are those? We're recording on a Monday. These get released always on a Wednesday. But what are Mindset Mondays for you at your school?
So we spent the better part of a whole school year. This was about 4 years ago. We read as a district, we were encouraged to look into Carol Dweck's research regarding growth mindsets. And I took a year, bought the book Mindset for all of our staff, teachers, aides, custodians, lunch monitors, recess monitors. We bought it for everybody and we read that together. And my vision for that was that I didn't know where it was going to go exactly, but I wanted to share that with everyone because I had read it and I realized, oh my gosh, this isn't just about helping students develop these mindset characteristics for themselves. This is for me. This is going to help me be a better principal, a better husband, a better friend. This will just help me be a better person. And I always felt like I was one of the lucky ones who kind of came with that growth mindset idea wired into me. But the idea that we could develop it was something that I was excited about. So we started to explore that and we started to study as a building staff. And one of the things that came out of that was there's got to be a way to get this into the beings of our little people, right? We have kindergartners who come in that are a blank slate. We have an opportunity there that's just awesome. And if we can send our fourth graders at the end of that time, intermediate school, maybe they'll stand out from the other elementary schools because of the way they approach problem solving, because of the way they carry themselves, because of their work ethic, because of their resilience in the face of challenges. So we started working with small groups of kids just to sort of explore how we might teach this to kids and how we might encourage it. And one of our students came up with a school motto. And the school motto is just do it, stick to it. Just do it, meaning, you know, don't be afraid. Mistakes are okay. Just do it, right? Just jump in and try something when you're faced with a challenge. And stick to it is the perseverance part. If we can get kids to not give up on themselves, to not give up on each other, to not give up on their learning, to understand that eventually through hard work, they can achieve anything that they want, whatever their goals are, then that would be fantastic. So we took that and we put it on the back of a t-shirt, and in true educator fashion, I was looking for a way to wear jeans on Monday, right? We wear them on Fridays, but I can make teachers happy if we can also figure out how to wear them on Mondays. And I said, I'm going to allow you guys to wear jeans on Mondays. But the catch is you have to have this t-shirt on. So there's a visible display. And then every Monday I get on the loudspeaker and I do a brief introduction about it's Mindset Monday. These are our values. And then I push a video out to everybody. And so there are some discussion questions linked to that video. It can be an animated thing. It can be some other inspirational video that matches with it. And teachers watch that with their classes. They go through, they're usually less than 5-minute videos. They spend the next couple of minutes discussing questions and having a discussion with their students, and then they get on with their day. And then, so that's kind of what we do on Mondays, but we're also trying to weave this into the culture of the building so that we're able to reinforce these things throughout the entire school year. And so we have stickers that we give to kids. Our values are that we are persistent because it helps us achieve our goals. We're willing to make mistakes because it's how we learn. We're willing to ask for help when we're stuck because it helps us see the problem in a new or a different way. And we welcome challenges and we seek them out because that's how we can become the best that we can be. So we took these values and we published them and posted them in these big circular posters on the walls in the hallway and says, I am persistent. I learn from my mistakes. I ask for help. I embrace challenges. And so now when teachers are recognizing that in their students, not just on Mondays, but any day, they'll take a matching sticker and they'll hear the child. And the child comes down to the office and they tell me their story about how they earned that sticker. And I take a picture of them and I hang it in the hallway. And then I text that picture to their mom and dad or their whoever's at home. And we celebrate the idea that they are experiencing growth mindset moments. And we want those to continue to go. And through storytelling, we want them to reinforce in their own mind that they can do and be those things. That's been amazing because I'll get students that'll bring me books and they'll recognize these characteristics in book characters. Or I'll get an email from a parent who says, I had an interesting conversation with my child this weekend. And you won't believe what she's saying about growth mindset or about willingness to make mistakes and so forth. It's really been pretty fascinating and exciting all at the same time.
Yeah, I admire that work you're doing there, Mike, in terms of building culture and around growth mindsets. As leaders, you know, you can't just say it and send an email on it, maybe make a video, but then you added posters. So visually around all the hallways, people are saturated with this idea. And then you made it easy for teachers to recognize students that are living out the values by getting stickers, right? And if I'm understanding correctly and hearing you right, I'm a teacher of third grade classroom. And I see my student Mike willing to make a mistake so he can learn from his errors and continue to grow. And so I give him that willing to make mistakes sticker. I send him off to the office. He sees the principal, tells a story. So there's this great moment of being proud as a kid of making a mistake, yep. telling the principal this awesome story of how he learned as a student from making a mistake. And then I'm going to get celebrated for that, a picture, and put up maybe on the Mindset Monday or whatever Hall of Fame. And mom or dad yeah. or whoever I live with is going to get a text with the picture and maybe a brief anecdote saying, hey, this is what Mike did in class today. So proud of him. You know, talk to right. him about it. That is awesome. And that's how you build culture.
And they get more and more opportunities to tell those stories. Because mom and dad are going to ask, tell me how you got your sticker. So I can tell the story. I've practiced it with the principal. I can tell it again to my mom. And I encourage the kids, tell it to your mom, tell it to your dad, tell it to your grandma, tell it to your neighbor, tell it to the dog. Dogs are great listeners. They love to hear these stories. And the kids just laugh, but it's that repetitiveness of telling stories. And now I have students in our upper grades who are recognizing it in their classmates. And the teachers have created nomination forms where kids are now collecting evidence on themselves and on each other. And they're nominating themselves. They're nominating their classmate and saying, hey, I really think that Angela is a great example of, has some great examples of perseverance. And I think she deserves a sticker. And so there's those little conference moments with teachers and students. And it really has transformed, I think, the learning culture in our school. But at the same time, our goal was to try to make it as visible as possible. We wanted to transform our school into a place where this was readily recognizable and kids could take from it what they will, so that they could, like I like to say, so they could become the best version of themselves. Because I'm going to get 5 years with them and then they're going to move on, right? And I want to send them on as prepared as possible.
It's great. And then the kids have ownership too, now that they're able to nominate their peers and collect evidence based on students living out the values too.
Yeah. And it all comes from within, right? We're all looking for ways for decades. So how do we build intrinsic motivation into kids? Not so much like I do this because I'm going to get a reward, but at the end of the day, the stickers, they're stickers. What kids are walking away with is pride, and they're walking away with good feelings about themselves and confidence. And when we have those moments with them, that's what we're able to talk to them about. And so to me, when I pitched this to the staff and how I thought we might go about it, and it's evolved, you know, with their input. I said to them, this seems like the holy grail of education. If we can figure out how to unlock intrinsic motivation for every child, we'll be doing something special. And at the end of the day, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, my guest, Josh Spodek, would agree with you. I think he was on episode 79. But listeners, if you type in Spodek, S-P-O-D-E-K, into the website, his episode will come up. Mike, he teaches leadership at NYU. He wrote mm-hmm. a book, Leadership Step by Step, and we read this in the mastermind when I work with principals and superintendents on a weekly basis. And Josh absolutely agrees with you. The internal motivators and connecting with people's passions is the best way to motivate people and to influence them. And I love that you're doing that with children at such a young age, because the extrinsic stuff will work for the very short term, and mm-hmm. it doesn't work for long term, and it's not that effective. But by tapping in, like you said, by tapping into those internal motivations, the sky is absolutely the limit. So Mike, you know, we've talked about a bunch of just awesome stuff about you and your school. So I love, though, asking this question and bringing some humility to the podcast. And what do you consider, Mike, your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Oh boy. I'm sure I'm like every other person out there. I've made a lot of mistakes, especially in the early parts of my career. I became a principal at the age of 29, in this district. It's the same district. I've been working as a teacher and as a principal for nearly 20 years. And I'd say that my worst mistake was probably thinking that I could make everybody happy, and that by doing that, I could somehow get everybody to move in the same direction. And my first experience as a principal, we had a school that was very resistant to change. They were, and I still believe this to this day, they were and are some of the most fantastic teachers. But at the same time, they struggled with change, probably like all of us do. And what I realized in those moments was that leadership's hard. No matter what decision you make, someone always seems unhappy, and unhappiness would linger in the culture of the school for a while. So I had to kind of get back to my compass, right? I had to kind of get back to the idea of, who do I serve? Why am I here? And I'm here for the kids. And I know that it's in my makeup. It's in my framework. But I think that leaders have to understand, especially young leaders, never underestimate the human desire to fit in or the human desire to be liked. And my early mistakes taught me that the culture was not improving unless I was going to be student-centered. And once they realized that I was going to make every decision based upon what I believe was best for kids, things didn't start to change. And so I just had to remain loyal to my core. And it sounds simple. It sounds like a no-brainer, but it's easy to get sucked in. And I think, you know, learning from those mistakes early on really helped me. And now I've changed schools. And I think the culture, that's an opportunity to set fresh and to set new, I guess, set yourself anew in your leadership and to learn from those mistakes. I would say our culture is very, very strong here and very fantastic in that way, and that we work together and everything is done through student lens. And, you know, the old saying is, what's great for students is bad for the adults, right? Because often what we're doing for students is going to cause us as adults to work differently or to take on more work or whatever. And so I think, you know, once I was able to sort of, you know, get my footing as a leader and get my own confidence, it's really been much better. But early on, I think it was a little dicey.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com.
Derek Sivers has a quote, "What is ordinary to you is extraordinary to me." Mike, what do you consider your superpower?
My superpower? Oh, wow. I would say that my superpower is being able to listen to others and coach them to different solutions to different problems. I guess that I'll have a hard time articulating this, but often we're met with, as principals, we're met with conflict, right? We have unhappy parents. We have dilemmas that present themselves in student learning. And there's a lot of people to bring together. And I think I'm very skilled at bringing people together. My staff will say to me all the time, nobody handles a ticked off parent better than Mike does. And just the way that you are able to, the way that I can bring people together and keep them focused on the student, I think is something that has really helped our school culture and helped us develop partnerships with parents. Because at the end of the day, parents they have their child that they're concerned about, and they're all trying to do the best that they can, and we have to respect that. We're doing the same thing. We have the student's best interest at heart as well. And so trying to bring all those players together and get them focused on the child and what the child needs, that's something I've been very good at. And it's something I think that helps us in the long run build trust with the community, build trust with our parents. And that's something I'm pretty proud of.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm curious if you can unpack a bit, you know, how you do that, if it's your superpower, if you've ever thought of it. I heard you talk about, this idea of respect and really mutual understanding that you both have the student's best interests in mind. But, you know, I think the listeners would write you a check for $1 million if you could teach us right now how you talk down parents that are pretty hot as they come into the school.
You know, I think the key to that is keeping your own emotions in check and realizing that when a hot parent comes into the building and they're yelling about your school or you or a teacher, they're not yelling at Mike. They're yelling at the principal. And those two are separate people. They're two separate roles. And so we have to be able to insulate ourselves emotionally if we're going to be the agent to change there. And then really it just comes down to good listening skills. And I do a lot of, when parents come in to talk to me, I do a lot of paraphrasing. I'll paraphrase a lot of what I'm hearing. And I'll do that on purpose because one, if I get it right, they know that I've heard them and now we can move on. If I didn't get it right, it gives them the opportunity to recognize, well, he's trying to listen, and it gives them an opportunity to clarify, an opportunity to restate what their concern is. And so a lot of times I'll listen, and this goes back to some training that we received as leaders.
Yes.
From the Center for Cognitive Coaching in Denver. Carol Lee Hayes was our trainer, fantastic person and a fantastic trainer. She taught us the skills to listen and to paraphrase. And so a lot of times I'll use what she's taught me. And so I'll listen and paraphrase, and then I'll say back to them, and what you're looking for is a way to whatever, or whatever you are feeling blank because of blank, and you're looking for a way to, and I try to summarize what their goal is. And once I get there, it's easy after that, because you have clarity in where you're going, and then now we can link arms as partners, and we can go do that together. And that's what I want to do, is find a way to solve those problems in a way that's collaborative. And we've been successful to do that. So a lot of times I think it just comes down to listening skills and people skills and how you relate to folks. But controlling your own emotions is usually the first challenge.
Yeah, you can't get pulled into an emotional roller coaster when a parent is hot. And listeners, you know, just to reiterate, that was pure gold what Mike was sharing there. And this idea of paraphrasing, or some people might call it mirroring or reflecting, these ideas are talked about in books like Crucial Conversations. I already mentioned Leadership Step by Step, or Never Split the Difference, a book on negotiation. All the great listeners and great negotiators and influencers use paraphrasing because it gives the leader a way to really understand the other person. And that's empathy. When you can be able to say back to somebody, you know, this is what I'm hearing. Is this right? Correct me if I'm wrong. And that helps you see the metaphorical walk a mile in their shoes. I love that picture that you illustrated for us, Mike, of linking arms with the parent, right? So that you can move forward together to do what's best for the kid. And, you know, even if you get 100% right and said, you know, and you paraphrase, a lot of times the person will say, well, no, that's not quite it, even though you got it right. But the best part is that they go a bit deeper. So now, mm-hmm. now you're getting information that you never would have gotten unless you had rephrased, you know, what you heard, and you get to maybe the real motivation. It's not that, you know, Johnny failed the test, right? It's that right. Maybe that the parent is scared for the kid's future because X, Y, and Z is happening at home. And once you unearth that, now you can really serve that parent. So rewind that part. What Mike just taught you about strategy working with upset parents was pure gold. I love it. And thank you so much for sharing that. Do you have any routines, like morning routines or rituals that help you get ready for the day and help it be a success?
I do. Most of my morning routine starts the previous day. I usually take a few minutes before I leave the office, and I'll look ahead in my calendar and look at my task list, and I'll pick something from there. that I'm going to start the day with. And then I set all that I need out for that task on my desk before I leave. It's usually something small, trivial, and who knows what it could be. It might be a phone call. It might be, you know, just approving certain forms. It could be anything. But I think, you know, like once you, I do believe in completing your first task of the day, it gives you a sense of accomplishment early. Mm-hmm. And once you get that going, it sort of breaks the ice. It inspires more action and starts to build momentum for the day. So when I walk in each morning, there it is sitting on my desk. I can sit down and get right to it and then get on with my day. Sometimes it might just be an article I've laid out to read for myself or a chapter in a book. If you get here early enough, right, it's very quiet. And those are golden opportunities to focus on my own learning at the same time. So that's usually how I start the day.
Mike, concerning school leadership, what have you changed your mind about in the past few years?
Oh, boy. I think, and this might be controversial.
Good. That's what we want.
I've changed my views on innovation.
Okay.
Innovation is often viewed, if you Google it, right, it's the application of better solutions to today's problems, right? I Googled it and I just read that. And so you're looking for better solutions, ways to be more effective. And I think that what I've realized about education is that the districts that have gone from good to great, including my own district, show me that the most effective school districts are the ones that teach children truly how to be thinkers, how to be independent, how to synthesize large amounts of information, communicate effectively, teach them how to collaborate. I believe that we're also effectively teaching kids how to gain those behavioral skills we talked about related to mindset and emotion control. But they also, at the same time, shun innovation. Technology can be a trap. Sometimes you get more concerned about the new technology and the things that we're trying to implement than we do the learning. You know, when I've been to places to talk about blended learning models, we end up talking more about the machines that we're using and the tools that are available and the logistical issues around rolling those things out. And we don't get much to talking about learning. We don't get to talk about how does that those tools change the way you've taught? How has it transformed your classroom? Those are conversations that need to be focused on. And maybe I've just missed out on those conversations. But, you know, years ago when smart boards came out.
Oh, yeah.
To this day, we don't have a single smart board in our district. And you said in the bio that NITCH just rated us number one public school district in America. Hmm. We don't have a single smart board. And the reason for that is because it didn't seem innovative to us. It just seemed like a teacher-centric piece of equipment. And if you look at the studies on those now, they were widely underutilized once they were bought and sit dormant for lots and lots of time throughout the school day. So we focus on being student-centered in our purchases and what we're trying to accomplish. And we took our time. We took time and we ended up with projection units in every classroom, Apple TVs, iPads. We're now a one-to-one Google school. But, you know, that came after much thought, deliberation, and strategy. I feel like a lot of folks jump on the bandwagon with things like makerspaces and blended learning models. And those are all good things. And I'm actually envious of those who are able to do that because I see a lot of cool things happening there. But at the same time, my responsibility is to make sure that whatever initiative we put in place, it results in some evidence of increased student learning or increased student growth. I've got to be able to produce the evidence for that. And so we tread lightly when we innovate. You know, we have to be good stewards of public money, and we have to be able to also show that what we're implementing is going to have visible benefits for our students. And that's the challenge. We probably miss out on some innovative things or some cool things to do because of that thinking. But at the same time, I feel like we're just trying to protect time. You know, we have 5.5 hours a day of instructional time with kids. What are we going to focus it on? So probably controversial, but that's how I've changed my views.
Yeah. And a valid perspective too. I mean, that smart board description, right? That brings me back. I remember when I was teaching and those are starting to get put up in all the classrooms. I never got one. Teachers were, man, spending hundreds of hours writing grants, you know, just to get them and to use them barely, right? And it's just such a clear example. But the other thing with innovation, and I'm just sharing this for mastermind members because there's an inside joke in one of the groups that loves to talk about Android versus iPhones, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, the way I look at it, both are amazing products. I used to have the Google only phone for years and years and years, and the reason why I did that, I like to mess around with it. I would root it. I would put a new operating system on it and really customize it. And that was so much fun. Then I realized, Mike, that I was spending so much time doing it. I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm just going to buy an iPhone, which I know you can jailbreak and do some of the things, but not as much as a Android. I just wanted to save myself some time and get something that worked very nicely out of the box. And I could connect that to what you're saying with smart boards, because actually a lot of times Android phones innovate smartphones and they're way ahead of Apple in terms of things you can do. But like mm-hmm. your school district, if you take a seat back and kind of just observe and see how the landscape's playing out and then perfect it and implement it a bit better, you know, that's what I would argue Apple does. They see kind of, yeah. All right, what can we do with screen size? What can we do with this feature, that feature? But when they come to the table with it, it's been well thought out and it's implemented at a higher level. And that's why they're people are such diehard fans with their product. So right. That's kind of how I think about innovation as well.
Yeah. And I don't want people to get me wrong. All of those things are important. They're future driven and they absolutely should be done. But I just don't think they should be done on their own merits. I think they should be done in a way that can demonstrate their value to increase student learning and growth. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're here for, is to give kids the best opportunities to develop themselves into the best version of themselves.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you are stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com.
Well, Mike, what do you do for fun?
Well, I have, my wife and I, we have four children. Their ages are 12, 10, 8, and 6. So most of my time is spent with them. I coach two football teams. I help out in the wrestling room, cheer on my girls in the gym or the track or the pool, the courts, you name it, wherever they are. I like to think of myself as a family man, and I hope that my family thinks so too. Otherwise, I'll have to change some things. But I spend a lot of my time with them and their activities. I always tease my wife and say to her that our life is not our own at this point. our life is for them. But when I do have the time to do some things for myself, I like to golf. Even though I'm terrible at it, I still like it. I enjoy dating my wife. Stealing an hour or two just to be with her is important. I enjoy just hanging out with our friends, relaxing, and those kinds of things.
What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
It's tough for me. You know, I'm an educator, so it's tough for me to pick one book. I would say there are a couple of books that I refer to constantly in my work. One of them is research-based, and that would be John Hattie and his Visible Learning book. If folks haven't dove into that yet, they should. He does a fantastic job of summarizing educational research and helping us to to decide what we should focus our time on and what maybe we shouldn't. And then the other book that I refer to a lot that has sort of gone along with our Mindset Mondays and our culture building it, guys, his book, Above the Line, Lessons in Leadership and Life from a Championship Program, was a New York Times bestseller and really has been a great launching point for us in terms of looking and how to develop a winning culture. And we look for applications of that in our school. So that's a book that I would recommend as well.
Well, Mike, I appreciate your time. You've made it to the end of the podcast. I would love to hear how you're going to answer this question, the favorite of all the listeners. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school? And what would be your top three priorities?
This is the most amazing question. I think that the school that I would try to develop would be internationally focused somehow. I would start by finding the highest quality people that I could, folks that shared my vision, folks who are dedicated to children and who are hungry to make a difference. I would want those people, and I would look for people who have all that. And if there was a way to measure it, I'd probably look for those that are smarter than me. Because I believe in collaboration and I believe in including others in the leadership process. Somehow I would want to have that school and its curriculum be experiential in some way. I feel like in education, we kind of live in our own little world, and there's a whole great big wide world out there that sometimes we forget is there because we live in this world of education. And so if I didn't have any limitations, we would travel the world somehow. We would make connections with world leaders and organizations. We'd build empathy. We'd develop service to others. We'd solve problems in context. And I have no idea how we would accomplish that, but I would want an internationally focused school to be internationally mobile. There would be challenges to that. You know, we'd have to figure out how to balance academics, arts, and athletics. But, you know, I think if you surround yourself with the right people, the solutions will come. And I think if we're not willing to give ourselves the ability to aspire to something great and maybe even crazy, then we don't know what the possibilities are for ourselves. So I would want to go somewhere in that direction.
Mike, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I'd say the best way to get a hold of me is to people can find me on Twitter at Mike Akam. And to the listeners, you're always welcome to my time. You can reach out to me in any way possible or on any topic. I guess my parting advice to the listeners would be to work on yourself first. No matter who you are or what you're doing, you know, as leaders who are charged with bringing people together and developing culture in schools and developing relationships with our community, we've got to be willing to work on ourselves and become the best version of us. And I'm a firm believer that no matter what we try to accomplish and what we try to teach others, it can't happen through us unless it happens in us first. And that includes developing the right mindset for yourself and demonstrating how to learn from mistakes and how to persevere and what resilience looks like. I think we have to be models.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it, just like Mike was talking about. Go out there and be a better leader today. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Mike. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Mike in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Mike, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much for having me, Daniel. I appreciate it.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.